The Damon Runyon Theater. Once again, the Damon Runyon Theater brings you another story by the master of storytellers, Damon Runyon. And this one, The Idol of Miss Sarah Brown. And to tell it to you, here is Broadway.
Thanks. Well, maybe you never hear of a citizen who is known as the Sky. And also, maybe you never hear of Miss Sarah Brown. It is a fact that any character along Broadway will lay more than a little 6 to 5 that the Sky and Miss Sarah Brown are as far apart as the North and South Pole. This is because the Sky is a gambler, and Miss Sarah Brown is a mission worker, and a 100% all right doll. But they do get together, and how this is done is a story that hardly anyone believes. But it is true, and I will tell you about it in a minute.
And now, back to the Damon Runyon Theater and the famous story, The Idol of Miss Sarah Brown.
As I am saying, Miss Sarah Brown is a mission worker, and the Sky is a gambler. How he gets that name is because there is no limit on a bet he will take or make. The sky is the limit with him, and he is very smart. Like the day we are at the polo grounds at the ball game. The game is over, and the Sky and me are walking across the diamond when we are approached by a character who is called Bates. Now, this Bates is a hard citizen, and he is also a big better. The Sky has eaten peanuts, which he pulls from his pocket, and we are near second base when Bates comes up to us. And the scene is as follows.
Hiya, Broadway.
Hi,
hello,
Bates.
Sky.
Oh.
Well, Sky, you win or lose on the game today.
I win.
Not me. I lose 100 on the game.
That's so. I win 5. Have a peanut.
Thanks.
Broadway?
Oh, thanks.
No. It was only that punk throw from second to home that makes me lose the C note. A good throw would catch the runner and I'm in. I get a bad break.
That's a pretty big throw from second to home plate.
Yeah.
You know, I was a pretty good ball player when I was a kid. Not so bad now.
Yeah? Yeah, and I still say if the throw is good, the Dodgers do not get the run, and I am in.
Bet I could make the throw from second to home plate.
So what? Anybody with an arm could do it.
Bet I could throw one of those peanuts from second base to home plate.
You're crazy.
A peanut is too light to throw that far.
Maybe.
Wait a minute, Sky. You are now standing on second base. You are willing to bet you could throw a peanut from here to home plate?
Mm-hmm.
In the air, not roll it on the ground?
In the air.
You're crazy, Sky. A peanut is a very light object and would not travel 20 feet through the air.
I'm willing to make a bet. Tell you what, Bates. You've had a bad day. I'm in a good mood. I'll lay you 3-1. I can toss a peanut from here to the plate.
You serious, Sky?
Very.
I have exactly 100 potatoes in my pocket. Will you put 300 against it?
Mm-hmm. Broadway, here. Here's my 3 C's.
And here is my C note. Now, go ahead, Sky. Toss the peanut.
You don't mind if I pick out a big one, huh?
As big as you want.
Does this one look satisfactory to you, Bates?
Sure, go ahead. Toss.
Would you like to try it first with this peanut? I'm willing to bet you can't do it.
No, you don't, Sky. You make the bet. You pick the peanut. You throw it.
Like you say, I make the bet. All right, Broadway, stand back.
Here goes.
It is impossible, but it is done.
It went into the stands.
On the fly over home plate.
I told you, I was a pretty good ball player. I will now take the C note.
There is something fishy about this.
Broadway is a witness that I offered the peanut to you first. Is that right, Broadway?
It is very correct.
So long, Bates.
I do not understand this. I do not understand it.
Why are you laughing?
It was too easy.
I do not see how you do it.
Well, Broadway, it just so happens that I have one peanut in my pocket that is weighted with lead.
Lead? How does it happen that there is a peanut with lead in it? They are usually full of peanuts.
Well, I just happen to have it with me in case I want to make just such a bet. However, I offered it to Bates first, so I didn't cheat.
That is right. It is a fine point, but it is correct. Sky, you are a very smart man.
No. Not smart, Broadway. Just careful. Because my father once told me something.
Like what?
I remember that he said to me a long time ago, he said, "Son,
Someday you're going to meet a man who will pull out a new deck of cards with the seal still on it. He'll offer to bet you that the Jack of Spades will jump out of the deck and squirt cider in your ear. Do not take that bet, my father says. Because as sure as you're a foot high, you'll get an ear full of cider.
Well, I tell you that to show you what kind of a citizen the Sky is. And he is honest. It is just that sometimes he insures a bet. But there is no character from Broadway to Los Angeles who will not take the Sky's word. It is as good as wheat in the bin. He is never crooked, and he hates citizens who are. But one day, we are walking along Broadway when suddenly he stops and points.
Broadway, look.
Huh? Where?
Who is that?
Well, I see no one but Harry the Horse, and you need no introduction to him.
No, not Harry. I'm talking about the doll.
What doll?
The one in uniform.
Oh, that one. Oh, that is Miss Sarah Brown.
Miss Sarah Brown. I don't get the uniform.
She's working for a mission.
What does she do?
What she is doing now. She collects money for the mission.
Oh, she's quite a lovely doll.
100% all right.
I take it you know her, huh?
Just from seeing her around.
Oh.
If you are thinking of meeting her, it is better that you put it out of your mind.
Why?
Because she has nothing to do with citizens of our ilk.
Oh? She doesn't like us, huh?
Not very much. She does not even accept money for her mission from us.
Mm-hmm. She's very young to be doing such work.
There is no accounting for tastes.
Oh, she's the kind of doll I'd like to meet.
If you like, I will attempt an introduction.
No, never mind.
But you are just saying that you...
I know. Forget it. I guess her type would think we're a bunch of bad citizens.
Yeah, I guess so.
Broadway, where were you born?
Right here.
Uh-huh. I was born in Colorado. Know where that is?
Is it possible to reach it by the subway?
Not quite.
Then I do not know.
Well, what I was going to say was...
Yeah?
Sometimes I remember the farm, the people. And I remember there was a girl.
A doll?
Yeah, as you say, a doll. I liked her, Broadway. She looked a lot like this Miss Sarah Brown.
Is there a possibility this doll you speak of and Miss Brown could be one and the same?
No, Broadway. There's no possibility. No possibility at all.
Oh, I see.
Okay, Broadway, let's move on. I have a date with a poker game.
Well, I do not see the Sky for a couple of days after that. But one night, I get a funny report that the Sky is missing quite a few big games. Now, that is not like him. So I nose around, and I learn that he goes quite often to the mission where Miss Sarah Brown works. I do not believe this, and I am willing to lay more than a little 6 to 5 it is not true. So I go to the mission to see with my own eyes. Sure enough, in the mission sits the Sky. I walk over to him, and the scene is as follows.
Broadway, what are you doing here?
I could ask the same question of you, Sky.
Yeah, sit down.
Here? In here?
Well, if you want to stay, sit down.
Okay.
Why'd you come here?
I hear something very funny.
Oh, about me, huh?
That is correct.
Well, it's true.
Miss Sarah Brown, huh?
Miss Sarah Brown.
She knows who you are?
No. In Broadway...
What, Sky?
If by any chance it should slip from your lips about what or who I am, I'd be very angry and take steps, you understand?
I understand.
Here she comes.
Hello there.
Good evening, Miss Brown.
How are you, Mr. Sky?
Oh, fine, just fine. Oh, this is a friend of mine. His name is Broadway.
I'm so glad, Mr. Broadway. We get so few people who come here. It's good to see a new face.
Business is not good, I take it?
No, it's not good. I guess people aren't very interested in their souls.
Maybe people don't know they have them until it's too late, huh?
You've been very kind, Mr. Sky. Your contributions have helped us so much. The new organ is you are doing.
What? Maybe I do not hear right.
You hear right.
Mr. Sky has been more than generous.
Been more than a pleasure, Miss Brown.
Oh, please call me Sarah. And you have a first name, surely?
I... Just call me Sky. Everybody does.
But why? It's such an odd name.
Yeah, it is. Just call me that, huh?
All right.
Sarah, maybe after the mission closes, you and I...
Oh, what I mean is maybe a cup of coffee.
Oh, we have coffee here. Please stay and have some.
In here?
Why not?
All right.
Well, I guess I gotta be going.
Oh, no, please. Stay with us.
Yeah, stay, Broadway.
But
Miss Brown asked you to stay, Broadway. And I'd like it very much if you did.
Good, that's settled then. And now, if you'll excuse me for a minute, I have some things to do.
I never see a doll look at me the way she looks at you, Sky.
Broadway, I've made a lot of money in my racket, but you know what?
What?
I'd be willing to drop every potato I own if I didn't get it the way I did.
Well, that is that. It is easy to see that the Sky is over the boards, but good. Every night he goes down to the mission, and every night he stays for coffee with Miss Sarah Brown. All the citizens are talking about it, and are not able to figure the angle. But I know that the Sky and Miss Brown are in love. But I wonder what is going to happen when she finds out about it. I find out one night, when the Sky, me, and some of the boys are sitting in Mindy's. Suddenly, the Sky looks up and says,
Sarah. Sarah.
Yes, Sarah.
I was just coming to the mission.
I'd rather you wouldn't come there anymore.
Maybe I better leave.
No, stay, Mr. Broadway. I want to say something. Maybe you'd be interested, too.
Will you sit down, Sarah?
Yes. Yes, I will. How big a laugh have you had, Mr. Sky?
Laugh?
It was easy, wasn't it?
What do you mean?
It was so simple. I was so simple.
Oh, look, Sarah,
you were so generous to us. You were a very big man among all the little people.
Is that what you came here to say?
Not quite all. I found out tonight who you are and what you are. I wouldn't have minded knowing who. But what you are, I can't accept that.
Miss Brown, I've never cheated. I've never done anything dishonest in my life.
You waited until you found me before you became dishonest.
I am not dishonest.
I call it that, Mr. Sky. But I'm not as big a fool as you think. You thought I'd accept you because of what you've done, but I won't. I despise you. As much as I liked you before, I despise you now.
Maybe you'll tell me why.
I don't have to tell you. Your own conscience, your own soul will do that. I've had men look at me before. I knew why. But they were honest men, Mr. Sky. They didn't pretend to be anything other than what they were. You did.
I gave the money because I wanted to.
I'm sorry we can't return the money you gave us. But I can ask you to stay away from the mission. And me. That's all, Mr. Sky. Goodbye.
I never hear a doll talk like that before.
Yeah. I thought it was a sure thing. But it looks like I got an ear full of cider.
Well, you may think that is the end of the story, but it is not. And how it ends is something for the books, and I will tell you about it in a minute.
And now, back to the Damon Runyon Theater and the famous story, The Idol of Miss Sarah Brown.
Well, like I am saying, Miss Sarah Brown comes into Mindy's that night and ticks off the Sky. Furthermore, she has nothing to do with him from then on. And when the Sky meets Miss Brown on the street, he keeps walking straight ahead. And she does likewise. Then one night, I accompany the Sky to a little game at Nathan Detroit's place, where a few of the boys are playing at dice. And what happens there is something that everybody still talks about. It is like this. We walk in and watch for a couple of minutes. Then the Sky walks over to Bates, who is also watching the game. Milky Willie has the dice, and he is rolling. The Sky says as follows to Bates.
How's he doing, Bates?
Milky, I wish I have his luck.
He's hot, huh?
Like a firecracker. 6 passes in a row.
Uh-huh. Hiya, Milky.
Ah, hello, Sky. You are going to play?
Maybe.
Stick with me and make a million. Here they go. That makes 7 in a row.
I wish I had your luck.
How does it happen you're not playing, Bates?
Because I have no potatoes. I am out of the lettuce. In short, I am broke. But if I have some, I would ride with Milk Ear.
Ride with me and make a million. How about it, Sky, will you?
Maybe later, not now.
All right, here it goes. Ha! Six, a little six. Easiest play to make.
He can make that without rolling the dice.
You think so, Bates?
The way he's been going, I couldn't do that to save my soul.
What did you say?
I said I couldn't do that to save my soul.
Milk Ear.
Yeah?
Hold it a minute. Don't throw.
What? When I'm hot?
I want to get down to bet.
Sure. I tell you, ride with me and you're in.
I'll bet against you making that six.
You will bet against my making a three-way point?
I will.
How much?
$1,000.
I hear you right. You will bet $1,000 against my rolling a six?
I'll bet you don't. But I'll bet against Bates.
I tell you, there's nothing in my pocket but fingers. And I'm not sure about those.
I'll bet $1,000 against your soul.
My soul?
That's right. If Milk Ear doesn't throw a six, I win. And your soul goes to the mission.
My what? Goes where?
Your soul goes to the mission.
Wait a minute. I do not like to have anybody's soul riding on my dice.
It's his soul, Milk Ear. Well, Bates, what do you say? Well, Bates?
How you feel, Milk Ear?
You better make up your mind soon before I cool off.
A grand against my soul. If I lose, I go to Miss Sarah Brown's mission. That it?
That's it.
Well, okay. You got a bet.
And if you lose, you better keep your bet. You got it?
We will see to it that he does not welsh, Sky.
You feel all right still, Milk Ear?
It is a three-way point, and I feel good.
You got a bet, Sky. Go ahead, Milk Ear. Roll him.
Right. Come on.
A five. Come on, Milk Ear.
We'll do better this time.
A six.
Looks like you owe me a grand, Sky.
There it is. Pick it up. It's yours.
I got $1,000. I will now get in the game.
That is a bad bet you made, Sky.
It's worth it. And don't forget the night is still young.
Well, like the Sky says, the night is still young. And it is not long before Bates takes the dice because now he has 1,000 potatoes. And what happens is that he hits a streak and wins. He figures it is his night. And it looks to be a fact, because he makes one pass after another. Finally, he throws a four, which is a hard point to make. And it is at this point that he looks at the Sky and says as follows.
Sky, I will take the odds off you on this one. I know you don't want my dough. I know you only want my soul for Miss Sarah Brown. Is that right?
That's right. Why?
I am now in the money and my price goes up. Will you lay me 10,000 against my soul that I do not make this four?
It's a bet.
10 G's against his soul?
That's it, Milk Ear.
Here we go, Sky.
Look at that. He makes a four, double deuce.
Looks like you owe me 10,000, Sky.
So it does.
You have 10 G's, do you not?
Did anyone ever say I welched on a bet?
You're as good as Times Square.
Broadway.
Yes, Sky.
Do me a favor, will you? Run over to my hotel with this key. I'll call the clerk. Tell him to open the safe and take out my money. And you bring it over here.
Well, sure. How many potatoes you got there?
About 100,000.
100 grand.
What's your idea, Sky?
It's my idea to keep betting against anyone who wants to bet.
Who keeps the dice?
You do, Bates.
Until when?
Until I win your soul for Miss Sarah Brown, or you win all my money. Well, what do you say?
I say you got yourself a deal.
Okay. Broadway, get going.
So I get Sky's money from the hotel, and it is quite a bundle. And it is not long before news of what's going on gets around the stand, and Nathan Detroit's place is packed with citizens. And the Sky has taken all bets. Every character who has a fin, a sawbuck, or a deuce is laying it on the line against the Sky. All the Sky bets for is the guy's soul. But Bates is plenty hot and never misses. It is not long before the Sky's money is down to a very thin shadow of its former self. Then the scene is as follows.
How much you got left, Sky?
I figure it, 5,000.
Wanna keep it for a stake, or...
I'll bet it.
There's only one thing wrong with that.
No? What's wrong with it?
At this point, my soul is worth more than 5 grand. It has been increasing in value right along.
What's your pitch?
I'll take the five, and you mark it for 20,000.
20 grand? Sky, you're nuts if you take that bet.
Maybe so, Milky.
You'll be in the hole. You'll owe that if you lose.
I'll still take the bet.
But why? Listen, Sky.
I figure one soul sent to Miss Sarah Brown is worth it. One guy. Just one. Throw the dice, Bates.
Okay.
Watch Bates shake the dice. We know that if the Sky loses this bet, he's cooked. But I see that he is watching Bates with a funny look on his face. And he is reaching slow-like for an inside coat pocket. I back away because I want no part of fireworks. I am not able to figure what Sky is doing or what is wrong. And then Bates rolls.
A natural. A seven.
You're very lucky tonight, Bates.
Like you say, I am very lucky. You owe me 20 G's.
I owe you 20 G's. Maybe.
Huh? What do you mean, maybe?
Just that. Bates...
Good evening, everyone.
Holy cats, Miss Sarah Brown.
Good evening, Mr. Sky.
Good evening, Miss Brown.
Hey, what are you doing here? How'd you get in?
I walked in. I see almost everyone is here.
Yes, that's right.
How many souls have you won for me?
None. I seem to be about half out of luck.
I see. Don't you think you're taking too much upon yourself? I can win all the souls I need myself.
I tried to help.
In your way.
In my way.
Have you ever thought of your own soul, Mr. Sky?
Sometimes.
I see. By the way, when I heard this was going on, I wondered about something.
What?
Are you risking your soul on these bets, or just your money?
My money.
But not your soul. All right, Mr. Sky. I'll gamble with you.
What do you mean?
I know something about gambling. I should. It ruined my father and my brother. Broke my mother's heart. Yes, I know something about gambling. Will you gamble with me, Mr. Sky?
Look, Miss Brown, maybe you better go.
No. I'll gamble with you on the same terms that you gambled with everyone here. I will bet $1 against your soul. That's all I have.
$1. $1.
Shut up, Milkier. Miss Brown, that's a very small bet.
It's a very small soul.
Bates.
Yeah?
Give her the dice.
Huh? Hey, listen, I don't...
Bates, give her the dice.
But I'm...
You heard me, Bates.
Sure, Sky. Here you are, Miss Brown.
Thank you. Do we have a bet, Mr. Sky? $1 against the life you lead. $1 against your soul. Will you keep the bet?
I never welch.
That's right, Miss Brown. He's good for it.
That is correct, Miss Brown.
All right.
Roll the dice.
11. She wins.
There is a dead hush. Miss Brown looks up at the sky. The sky looks at Miss Brown with a little smile on his lips. And then he says...
I never welch on a bet.
You're a fool. You're a fool.
I love you, Miss Sarah Brown.
I hate you. I hate you. I hate you. Let me out of here. Please let me out.
Yeah, it's like I said. I'm half out of luck. But the half I've got left, it's pretty good.
Well, that is that. But it is not, really. The payoff comes some weeks later. And what the payoff is, I will tell you in a minute. Walking down Broadway, and who do I see but the sky? But now he is wearing a mission uniform, and he is looking happy and better than I ever see him look. He is walking with Miss Sarah Brown when he sees me. He says something to her, and she goes into a store. Then the sky comes over to me.
Hello, Broadway.
Oh, Sky, how goes it?
Oh, fine. For the first time in my life, I'm happy, Broadway.
And Miss Brown?
She is Mrs. Sky.
Well, congratulations.
Thanks.
Bates is looking for you.
Is he? To collect his bet, I guess, huh?
It would seem to be the case.
I owe him nothing. I've got those dice we used that night, Broadway.
Huh? Wait a minute. I remember. I see you look at him funny-like.
Sure.
Phony dice?
Phony dice. But Broadway...
Yeah?
Don't do anything about it.
But he uses phony dice. That is a crime.
No, Broadway. You see, Mrs. Skye thinks she beat me at my own game for my soul. I wouldn't like her to think anything else. Because this time, I didn't get the ear full of cider.
And so ends the famous Damon Runyon story, The Idol of Miss Sarah Brown. Listen in again next week to... The Damon Runyon Theater. The Damon Runyon Theater with John Brown as Broadway is directed by Richard Sandville and the stories adapted for radio by Russell Hughes. This is a Mayfair production.
A little bit of twist and a question as to what is really luck. In the Damon Runyon Theater, The Idol of Miss Sarah Brown, starring Gerald Moore, and also with John Brown, the very versatile John Brown, as Broadway. He ranged from Broadway to Gillis in The Life of Riley, and also in The Life of Riley, John Brown was Digby O'Dell, your friendly undertaker. Next, well, we'll hear him again from Gerald Moore, this time as Philip Marlowe, as old-time radio drama continues this Sunday night, right here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tonight, Marlowe's looking for a guy named Dave Stroud, who has left Evelyn Wyatt in the lurch. And why? Marlowe tracks him via train to San Francisco and stumbles into murder in The Face to Forget. One of the adventures of Philip Marlowe from June 14th, 1950.
Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road, and those who travel it wind up in the gutter, the prison of the grave. There's no other end. They never learn.
For your enjoyment, Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum brings you Raymond Chandler's most famous character in... The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. To make every day more enjoyable, treat yourself often to refreshing, delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. Here's a taste treat you can enjoy indoors, outdoors, at work, or at play. The cool, long-lasting mint flavor refreshes you. The smooth, steady chewing helps keep you fresh and alert, adds enjoyment to whatever you're doing. Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. Healthful, refreshing, delicious. Now, with Gerald Moore starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's exciting story, The Face to Forget.
All right, wise guy. I told you once you couldn't come up here to this room, Marlowe.
That's right, landlord, but I found all I needed.
Well, you won't be able to use it after I teach you some manners. Snooper! Oh! I'll teach you to break into a respectable room and house.
Not leading with your rights, you won't. Now get up. Come on, get up. Okay. I'll teach you something about cooperation, landlord. All I wanted to do was look this room over, and I was nice about asking.
Cut it out. I got my rules. Yeah,
and I got a job to do. I've been looking for Dave Stroud for a solid week, and his trail finally led me here.
I got to look out for my roomer's privacy.
Sure, sure. Only Dave Stroud checked out of here this afternoon. He's no longer your guest. Anyway, I found enough in here to know Stroud's taking the train tonight for San Francisco. So that winds up my lecture, and I'm happy to say my business with you and your charming establishment. Good night, landlord.
I stepped out of the cheap, musty rooming house into the warm night. I felt for the first time in a week that I wasn't wasting my time. That by tomorrow, I'd know why a quiet young guy named Dave Stroud had suddenly dropped everything that gave life some sense. Everything from a lovely girl to a fine job and vanished. Completely. I stopped in a phone booth, called my client, and told her to meet me in an hour at the Leopard Spot, the bar in her hotel. Then I made a reservation on the 10 o'clock train for San Francisco, went home and threw a toothbrush and shirt into a bag, and when I walked into the Leopard Spot, I was right on time. I found my client, Ellen Wyatt, in a booth near the back. The soft rose lights touching her face made me wonder all over again what kind of pressure it could possibly have been to drive Dade Stroud away from a girl like this.
Tried to wait in my apartment upstairs, Phil, but I just couldn't. Is it good news?
I hope so, Ellen. That broken-down rooming house over in East L.A. paid off all right.
Dave was staying there?
Yeah, he had been, under the name of Donald Stranigan.
But why would he take a place like that? He must have plenty of money with him.
Oh, well, the city's cluttered with those joints. They're as common as tin cans. He figured you can't look into all of them. We were just lucky.
Then he knows what he's doing. There's nothing wrong with him like amnesia.
No, it's something else, Ellen.
Oh, good evening, Miss Wyatt. Martini?
Yes, please.
For you, sir?
Martini sounds fine.
Yes, sir.
Right.
Marlowe, maybe that hunch I had about gambling, maybe it was right after all. Couldn't some kind of terrible jam with gamblers do this to Dave?
Yeah, that might. But I checked that and drew a blank. Say, listen, Ellen, the description of Dave I got at that rooming house isn't too complete. That snapshot I asked you about, you bring it?
Oh, yes.
Oh, good.
It's in my purse. Here.
That
was taken on our first date 4 years ago.
4 years ago? Those years made quite a change in both of you.
Yes. Dave and I are good for each other, Phil.
Oh, sure.
I only hope that the next four
here we
years...
are. Martini, very dry.
Oh.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Well, I wish we had the kind of news we could toast.
Maybe we will. Sooner than you think.
You've got a new lead? You know where Dave is?
Well, close enough to be pretty sure he's taking the 10 o'clock to San Francisco.
San Francisco?
Yeah, and so am I.
Phil.
How about coming down to the station with me, huh?
Me? But do you think that's wise? What if he saw me first?
Well, it's worth a chance for you to point him out to me. What do you say, baby? Got something to drink to now?
Yes, and I'd better do it fast before I start to bawl. Tears would be awful in a martini. No luck, Phil. I still haven't seen him.
Wait a minute. How about that one, Ellen? Over there at the cigar counter.
Quick. Oh, the fellow in the T-shirt?
Yeah.
Dave couldn't look that sloppy. Besides, he's taller.
Oh.
Well, that's it, Phil.
Yeah. Well, I guess we missed him. I better get aboard, huh?
This kind of scares me. You don't think Dave just pretended to be leaving, that he tricked you?
No. Those leads weren't planted. They weren't that good. Don't worry, baby. Dave will be on this train when it pulls out. I'll bet my last buck on it.
Find him for me, Phil.
Sure. You just keep that chin up.
I will.
Okay.
And call me the very first chance
last
you get.
Call right. For train 61.
Pardon me, lady. I'm sorry.
Hey, you give that round back.
Me?
Yeah, just a short minute, my friend. Unless you happen to favor dirty shirt size 17, you're in for a big disappointment.
What are you talking about?
Well, I think you made a small mistake there. Isn't that my bag?
I'm afraid not, mister. CP is in Philip, M is in Marlowe.
Well, how do you like that? I saw you pick it up back there at the information booth. That's where I left mine. I'm sure sorry.
It's all right. Happens to everybody sooner or later.
Yeah, well, now that's mighty big of you, friend. Say, you're going to be on old 61 for Frisco, too, aren't
right
you?
Right, so, yeah.
Well, let's call this an introduction. Arback's my handle. Manny Arback, on the road for Pfeiffer Plumbing Fixtures. Yes, sir. I'll see you on board, friend.
Not much doubt about that.
No, we might get up a little game. Fun, huh?
Oh, fine.
Yeah, well, I better shake a leg and get my bag. I'll find you, all right. I never forget a face.
Maybe I ought to cut my head off. I stopped off in my compartment just long enough to drop my suitcase. Then as we pulled out, I moved through the train to the dining car and picked a seat where I could keep an eye on the rest of the tables for Dave Stroud. Well, even if I didn't recognize his face, I knew from his fiancée would handle a knife and fork European style. He likely to order liver and bacon and drink tea without sugar, and would probably be dressed in woolen tweeds with the shirt collar open. Well, as soon as I sat down, the car began to fill. My table companion, a quiet tab collar type, had his own business and knew how to mind it, almost 100%, which he did for the 15 minutes it took him to eat.
Well, I don't know why food always tastes better on a train, but it does. Thanks for letting me share the table with you.
Oh, not at all.
Perhaps I'll see you later in the club car. We might have a nightcap.
Yeah, it's a deal.
Fine. So long.
So long.
Oh, Hassel, there you are, Marlo.
Oh, fine.
Hey, I've been looking high and low for you, my friend. What you doing in here? They serve nothing but food in this car, you know. Say, who's your pal?
I don't know. He was here 15 minutes and we didn't get that far.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
You do?
Yeah, those quiet birds give me the willies, too. You know, friend, I've seen him someplace before, and I never forget a face. You didn't catch his name, huh?
He didn't throw it.
Oh.
You like that, huh?
Yes, sir, you're right on, my friend. Well, it'll come to me. Faces are kind of a hobby with me. I meet a lot of people, but I never forget a... Hey, have you lost somebody in here the way you keep looking around?
Yeah, but I think I found him again.
Hey, what's up? Where are you going?
Play follow the lead. I'll see you, Al, back.
Hey, Marlo, come back. You dropped something here.
In spite of the fog kicked up by the traveling typhoon who never forgot a face, I'd managed to catch a glimpse at the door of a bunch of tweeds and an open collar on a bill that exactly fit the 4-year-old snapshot in my wallet. I bucked a huddle of undecided dowagers blocking the aisle, but managed to keep him in sight all the way back to car 16 without being seen. There I watched him unlock compartment L and go inside. I was convinced it was Abe Straub, but at this point I had to be sure. I went to look for the conductor and finally found him tucked away at a lonely table back in the club car, as intent on his ticket count as a cheat at solitaire. I figured I could afford the time now, so I decided to wait. I headed back for the seat and I ran into my dinner partner, the tab collar.
Well, hello again. You're a little early for that nightcap, but sit down anyway.
Thanks.
Oh, by the way, I'm Roy Tarney.
Oh, mine's Marlowe, Philip Marlowe.
Philip Marlowe? Why, I've read that name many times. You're the famous private detective.
Well, private detective anyway. Glad to know you, Tarney.
Privilege for me. Oh, are you looking for a match here?
Yeah.
Oh, keep them. Keep them. I have others.
Oh, thanks. Thanks again.
Are you on a case now, Marlowe, or should I ask?
Well, as a matter of fact, I...
Hey, Marlowe! Marlowe! Man, are you hard to hang on to. But you're mighty lucky I'm honest, my friend. You see this?
Yeah, I see. It's my wallet.
Yeah. When you bolted out of the dining car, you dropped it on the seat. I found it for you.
Oh.
Nothing fell out but this picture here. And is she all right, man? Oh, man. Who is she, boy? The name, I mean, huh?
Don't tell me. I bet you've seen it before.
Yeah, that's right. I never forget a face.
Uh-huh. Well, thanks. Now, if you let me have it, I'm very grateful.
Sure. Glad to be of service, my friend.
Oh.
Anytime I can... Well, speaking of familiar faces, this is the gentleman that you had dinner with, huh?
That's right, Auerbach. This is the gentleman. Mr. Auerbach, Mr. Tarney, for better or worse, till your destination do you part.
How do you do?
Tarney. Now, that's funny. You know, I was just telling Marlowe here that I recognized you from someplace.
No, it's very unlikely. I have a fair memory myself. I don't remember you.
Well, I don't know. I'm pretty good with that. Hey, wait a minute. I'm getting it. Sure. Oh, this is silly. Why, I saw you tonight in the railroad
station. No, that's impossible. I was so late I nearly missed the train.
Me too. Only you had a good reason. Oh, yes, sir, my friend. You were kissing the little woman goodbye. I couldn't see her too well, but she was quite a looker. And judging from the way you were going at it, you... Yeah. Well, now, wait a minute, friend. I didn't mean any offense. I was just kidding you along. Yeah, well, I guess I'll go by my way into a little poker. Excuse me.
I suppose there has to be one on every train.
Yeah. They help the ride like a square wheel.
Yeah. Well, I think I'll go read a while, Marlo. Good luck on your case.
The conductor climbed out of his pile of tickets to stretch. I went over, introduced myself, and asked the $64 question.
Car 16, compartment L, huh? Well, let's see. Oh, here it is, Mr. Marlowe. That room's occupied by one Daniel Stacy.
Daniel Stacy? Yeah, sure. Same initials as Dave Straw.
But we're not carrying any Dave Stroud tonight.
Don't bet on that, conductor. It was that simple. I walked up through the train to car 16, and when I got to the door of compartment L, I'd already decided on how to handle Dave. Convince him that he had to go back to Ellen Wyatt regardless of what had happened to him. Yeah, I had it all figured until I heard it. It had come from inside. The door was unlocked, but the lights were out. When I got them on again, I realized that nothing was simple. Ever. Stretched out on the floor of Dave's room was Manny Auerbach, staring straight up as he rocked with the pitch of the train, the side of his head against the sharp steel corner, his eyes already beginning to glaze.
He said he knew I'd remember sometime.
Remember what? Why did you come here, Manny?
He said I'd remember.
Manny! Manny! Well, Marlowe, it's your move again. Let's see you tell this to Ellen Wyatt. Who's that? What? Ooh! Oh!
To make every day more enjoyable, treat yourself often to refreshing, delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. The lively, full-bodied, real mint flavor cools your mouth, moistens your throat, freshens your taste. And the chewing itself gives you a little lift, helps you keep going at your best. So for real chewing enjoyment that's refreshing and long-lasting, always keep Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum handy. Healthful, delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Gum will make every day more enjoyable. Now with our star, Gerald Moore, the second act of Philip Marlowe and tonight's exciting story, The Face to Forget.
Either it had been the flat of the pistol crashing against the side of my head, while my head crashing against the stone-hard floor of the compartment, that had turned light into dark and left me with a welt behind one ear the size and shape of a cue ball. I couldn't tell which. But when I had both my eyes open, I knew that it didn't matter. That nothing mattered really, except that I was staring into Manny Auerbach's dead face, while only inches away a pair of feet were moving. Feet that belonged to Dave Stroud, whose suitcase in tow was on his way out. One hand already on the doorknob. I went for him, or on the knees.
Let go, I say.
No. By the time I was off the floor and after him, he was well out in front. But wrestling with a heavy steel door at the end of the empty passageway slowed him down. When we reached the platform between the cars, he was almost mine. But then suddenly a hand shot out of the dark, grabbed a fistful of shirt front and spun me hard against the opposite door.
No!
A hand that belonged to a man in a tab color. Mr. Roy Tawney, plus a shiny .22 automatic, and minus his club car velvet voice.
Get up, Marlowe. We've got a little talk coming.
At this stage, it'll be a pleasure. Believe me.
We'll see. What do you want with Dave Stroud?
I'm a census taker who's real...
Cut it. Time is running short, Marlowe. When you get off at this stop coming up, you stay off.
Yeah? What's your angle?
Dave. He still needs my help, and he's still going to have it.
No matter who he kills?
Kills? What's that supposed to mean?
Manny Auerbach, the chummy one who couldn't forget faces. He's very dead back in Dave's compartment.
Well, then that loudmouth wasn't just a blowhard salesman after all. He was what Dave's been running from, one of those lousy card shops.
Slips, huh, Tony?
Yeah, but they don't count, Mr. Detective. Nothing counts anymore but Dave getting out of a jam that can cost him his hide. Just for the record, that game back in L.A. 3 months ago that cost Dave every cent he had plus 10 grand he didn't was about as level as the rest of that knee-pants town ever gets.
Which makes you what?
Two things, smart Alec. First, a guy from Detroit, a real town, who doesn't like a lousy fix. And second, I like a fix even less when the sucker on tap is my own brother. Now, people, get back away from that door. The station's on that side. I wouldn't want you to run for it and get shot. Before you got to say a few words. Back over here, Marlowe.
Take it easy with that gun, huh? They go off, you know.
All right, the pitch. Let's have it now. What's Dave to you?
Ellen Wyatt. Mean anything?
Not very much. But Dave is sorry about that. So when you get back to your client... Hold it. Just like you are and stay cheerful.
This stop, Carter. Carter, gentlemen.
Conductor, this train wait here a while? I mean, is there any time to get off and stretch?
No, sir. Just stop long enough to pick up a little mail. Leave a little mail once in a while, take on a passenger. Hardly ever, though. Carter folks aren't much on traveling. Oh, by the way, aren't you the gentleman who was looking for Mr. Stacy?
Yeah. I found him, thanks.
Oh, don't mention it. Glad to be of service. Say, don't get too close to the edge here, gentlemen. Carter! Carter, California!
We were talking about Ellen Wyatt, Tony. Why didn't precious brother Dave ever let her know that he had to lay low, that he was in a jam with gamblers? A bunch of roses with card and clothes could have gone a long way, or again, there's the telephone.
Oh, button it up, Marlowe. I don't know any of the details. Maybe the kid didn't want to know he couldn't stay away from the pasteboards. Maybe he just didn't want to worry. Anyway, that's not the point.
Then what is?
That a broken heart beats a broken skull 7 times a week. You should know that much, Pete.
So?
So I don't want you, the girl, or anyone else to know where Dave is heading. At least not until I get back to L.A. by my lonesome and call a few spades just that.
Like they do in Detroit, maybe, huh?
Like they do in Detroit, no, maybe. You tell the Wyatt, babe, I'll look her up then. Now you get over there at the door and you take your choice.
Jump or get pushed?
Jump, pushed, or shot. Go on, Marlowe. This is where you get off. Go on, the longer you wait, the harder it's going to be. Name it. Jump, push, or shot.
I couldn't say much for the alternatives. But one look back over my shoulder at the gaping .22 automatic leveled at my head and Tawny's ice-cold gray eyes above made up my mind for me. Jump, it had to be.
Oh. I would always remember one thing about Carter, California. The right of way was more sand than stone. I was grateful.
Carter Station, Willis Henson speaking. The Limited left 10 minutes ago. No, no package for you, Miss Lillis fan. I'm sure. Huh? Me snapping at you. Now listen, Miss Lillis. Brass or some people. Say, what happened to you, son?
I tripped. Dad, this is important. Can you tell me where the Limited stops next?
Well, is anybody getting on at Murdoch Corner?
No. The first real stop. A good-sized town.
Let's see. Smoke cigars, son?
No. Look, Dad, this counts. Now, come on, tell me, will you?
Yeah, sure. Well, now, there's Fulton.
Oh.
You got a match, please, son?
Oh, yeah, here. Here's a whole book keeping. Now, tell me, how far is Fulton?
Oh, 40, maybe 50 miles. Upgrade on the road.
How can I get there in a hurry? I got to catch that train.
Well... if you got a car, you can...
Where can I rent a car or get a cab?
It's just not a chance, honey. Oh, excuse me, Jake's calling from Bakersfield. He's expecting a grandchild.
Hooray for Jake. Now listen to me, Dad. There's a dead man on the Limited and his killer as well, and I was tossed off the train. Now let's take the business.
Well, in that case, let's call ahead and get the police.
No, I don't want that.
Well, why not, son?
Because for one thing, the killer may have been justified. Self-defense and the sight of the law will toss him into a lot of panic. He'll only end up in more gunplay. And for another, I have a very personal axe to grind.
Getting tossed off the train, huh?
Yeah, among other things. Now, will you tell me that coupe out there, is it yours?
Yeah, but I can't
for
let
50
you take
bucks?
My car. You're cash?
Cash. Here. Also, here's my credentials. I'm a private detective out of L.A. I'll get your car back to you as soon as possible. I'll pay you another 50 when I do. Now, give me the keys, will you, quick?
Yeah, sure. Okay. Here. It's one in the middle.
Thanks, Dad, and don't worry. I'll drive real quick.
What's the matter, son? Well, you're staring like you don't feel so good. What is it? Your head, maybe?
Yeah, my head, maybe. I ought to have it examined. Sometimes it's real slow coming up with the truth.
The truth? What do you mean, son?
I mean, I got a big fat hunch. A hunch that may be able to stop a second murder. If I make it to Fulton in time. So long, Dad. Thanks a lot. You've been a great help. My apologies and congratulations to Jake. Like the station agent himself, Willard Hansard's coupe was a little less than spry. But with the accelerator jammed hard to the floor and only a straight, empty highway ahead, I managed to keep it at a straining 70 most of the way. And 50 minutes later, when I tore into Fulton and followed the street markers to the station, a long, low, welcome sound in the night told me I was on time. The train was just getting underway again. I slammed to a stop at the end of the depot, piled out of the coupe and started to run for the last car. But I changed my mind. The train could chug on its merry way without me. After all, it was going without Dave Stroud and his big brother. The two men were walking down the deserted platform toward me. I slid back into the shadows of a pile of crates and waited, my hand tight on the .38 in my pocket, suddenly positive that my hunch was now a sure thing. Roy Tawney was not Dave's brother, but he was the one who had murdered Manny Owl back in Car 16, Compartment L. And he was ready to try murder again.
All right, Stroud, that's far enough. Hold there.
Tawney, you're out of your mind. You've got no reason to kill me. I'll never say anything. Ellen knows that. That's why I ran. I could never turn Ellen over to the police. I love her.
Oh, yeah, sure. You're nuts about it. You got lots of reasons to be, haven't you? Reasons like Ellen crossing you up for me and a tall stack of dough. Reasons like knowing that we're both responsible for knocking off our ex-boss to come into that dough. Sure, kid, you got lots of reasons to love her.
But, Tawny, I tell you I do. I ran away, didn't I?
Oh, but of course, Mr. Stroud, of course you ran so that you could wait for a smart time in a smart place to try blackmail.
No, that's not it. I ran because I love Ellen. Because whatever she's done has been your fault.
Oh, no, you got it all wrong. The lady was the pilot all the way. Even to hiring a lousy peeper named Marlowe to tag you so that I'd know where to get my hands on you.
The man on the floor in my compartment? The dead man?
That was a loudmouthed salesman with a memory for faces. He would have spoiled everything if he'd remembered that he saw me with Ellen in the railroad station and passed it on to Marlowe. I had to shut him up and then give the peeper a big cock and bull story about you being my brother and in hot water with gamblers.
And Marlowe was the one who grabbed for me.
That's right, Stroud. That was Marlowe. Too bad he didn't grab better, isn't it?
Yeah, perfect shame, what? Tawny.
Will you turn your lights off? He's got a gun.
Next two of us.
Is he dead, Marlowe?
Yeah, Dave. Even in Detroit, he'd be called dead. Come on, Dave. We got some telephone calls to make. The police, for one.
All right. Marlowe, is all this really true?
Yeah, I'm afraid so, Dave. The girl you wouldn't turn in for murder wanted to murder you. Believe it, kid, all at once it'll be easier later on that way.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Marlowe, for getting here when you did. You saved my life.
Well, not exactly. A guy named Willis Hansard gets part credit for that. Guy runs a railroad station at Carter, California, and also smokes cigars and sometimes runs out of matches.
What does that have to do with it?
Everything, Dave. See, Hansard needed a light, and I gave him a book of matches that Roy Tawney had given me earlier in the club car. I hadn't noticed them then, but I did when Hansard used them. They came from the Leopard Spot, dude.
The Leopard Spot?
Yeah.
The cocktail lounge at Ellen's hotel?
That's right. And I couldn't buy Tawney's having them as just coincidence to tie them into Ellen too tight. A hunch said so. Wait here, will you, kid? It'll only be a couple of minutes. I've got a long-distance call to make before we get in touch with the police.
To Ellen? But what are you going to tell her, Marlowe?
Anything, Dave. Anything that'll keep her right where she is, ready and waiting for what's going to turn out to be the L.A. police. I won't be long, kid. After the telephone call, Dave and I spent a long hour with the Fulton police, explaining why a man named Roy Tawney was lying in their quiet railroad station, face down in a pool of his own blood. And it was a long hour again with the railroad officials who arrived with their own set of questions. Well, it was 4 o'clock in the morning before we were finally aboard a train, heading back for L.A. Dave Stroud and I sat opposite each other in silence through that bleak, empty hour when you can almost feel the day that's coming up nudge the one that's just gone by. I was real glad to see it go. I sat there looking at Stroud and wondered if he'd ever heard the lyrics of a song a train whistle always makes me think of. My mammy done told me. When I was in knee pants, my mammy done told me, son, a woman's a two-face. A worrisome thing who'll leave you to sing the blues in the night.
Remember, friends, to make every day more enjoyable, treat yourself often to refreshing, delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. There's lots of cooling, real mint flavor in every stick. And chewing Wrigley's Spearmint helps keep you feeling fresh and alert. You feel better, work better, get more fun out of doing things. So indoors, outdoors, wherever you go, keep some healthful, refreshing Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum handy. To make every day more enjoyable, treat yourself often to delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, bringing you Raymond Chandler's most famous character, star Gerald Moore, are produced and directed by Norman MacDonald and written for radio by Robert Mitchell and Gene Levitt. Featured in the cast were Harry Bartell, Sammy Hill, Roy Rowan, Parley Bear, Larry Dobkin, Elliot Reed, and Junius Matthews. The special music is composed and conducted by Richard Arant. The makers of Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum invite you to be with us next week when Philip Marlowe says...
This time I tangled with three snakes. The first was made of gold... The second wore a mustache, and the third was in the bag, and each in its own way, poison.
Bob Stevenson speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That was The Face to Forget, one of the adventures of Philip Marlowe, starring Gerald Moore, from June 14th, 1950. A train ride and murder and attempted murder. Yet to come tonight at about 10:30, it's the CBS Radio Workshop with I Have Three Heads. Wait till you find out what that one is all about. And next up, it's a story from The Clock, by Lucille Fletcher, who brought you some of radio's greatest plays. It's all coming your way between now and 11 o'clock here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.